Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Block Talk Radio Studios, right here in the heart of Hudson County, ladies and gentlemen, you know it's always in Union City, New Jersey. Insider NJ proudly brings to you Politically Direct, and I am the Professor Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here, the 19th of June, the year 2020, and ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you, I'd love to control alt delete 2020, as I'm sure I know all of you do as well, because it's just been a tumultuous year to say the very least. But anyway, I want to thank you all for listening it from wherever and however you might be doing so here on Block Talk Radio. And of course, from wherever you are in Hudson County, the Garden State, or even throughout the good old US of A, thank you again for tuning in here to your favorite podcast via Insider NJ. Now, again, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, folks, which is politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Once again, if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic, write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram @politicallydirectnj. And certainly you can follow my own Instagram @ProfessorFernandoUribe. Plenty of new followers, tons of new likes. And I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories. Try to include a little bit of everything, whether it's memes, politics, sports, pop culture, pro wrestling, and even some politically incorrect humor, because you know I love that. And I know many of you do too. So check it out on my Instagram pages, as well as hit me up on Twitter @ProfessorFUribe. And for all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. Now, as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, I am proud to partner with Insider NJ, and check out all the excellent journalism that they provide to you on a daily basis by going to www.insidernj.com. Once you click on the website, folks, on the upper right-hand corner is the subscribe button. And once you do, you're automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So as you get up in the morning, as we continue in this pandemic at home, whether you're walking your dog, whether maybe you're just going on the front porch to pick up the paper, maybe, I don't know, you're just walking to your local store maybe to get coffee, who knows. In any event, once you, you know, look at your inbox on your phone or your tablet, whatever it is, you'll see the morning intelligence briefing there waiting for you. And as I said, it's the best journalism anywhere in the state. It starts right here with Insider NJ at the very top with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, and certainly working our way down to the amazing columnists that we have, which include Jay Lasseter, Fred Snowflack, Alan Steinberg, and the others that are just amazing. So, folks, you know, people like to read other things. I don't know why you do, because the best journalism and for the best coverage of what's going on in New Jersey. Nobody does it better, once again, than Insider NJ. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and, of course, follow them on Twitter. Don't forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Now, the opinions and views expressed here and every week on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. They do not represent those of Insider NJ, the manager, the journalist, the staff, or our sponsors. Folks, I got to tell you, it's, you know, this really, you know, we're mid-June here. So first and foremost, before, I wouldn't say I would forget, but in advance, just a happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. Starting off with my dad, who listens to this podcast religiously every week. Loves to give me feedback and certainly, you know, to discuss what's going on in New Jersey politics, and not just my own dad, but all the dads this weekend. Really, Father's Day should be every day for all the great things you do for us. So have a great one. I know normally at this time of year, I'm taking my dad and my uncle along with my cousin to a Yankee game. Unfortunately, we can't do that right now because of COVID-19, and clearly we're not going to be able to do that for the rest of 2020. So if we do see any Major League Baseball, it'll be down in Florida. We're hoping the owners and the Players Association can get to some sort of agreement, because I'd like to see some sort of baseball in 2020. I mean, obviously can't go to, you know, Yankee Stadium to watch my Yankees, but at least watching them on TV via them playing in Florida would be nice. But, you know, let's cross our fingers here. But again, happy Father's Day in advance. And, you know, one of the things that really gets me going on a daily basis as I'm reading different political platforms is this idea of how so many people in New Jersey are, I think, just been up in arms, and they're just tired of Governor Murphy. And I think that they're also tired of what's been going on, quite honestly, here in the state of New Jersey during this pandemic. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the subject of my first shot. And without question, folks, we know that in recent weeks, Governor Murphy has taken some heat. Normally in traditional, you know, media online here in the state, but more so on social media. The reason I say that is because we've been seeing sort of a glaring hypocrisy as to what the governor prioritizes and what some people feel he doesn't prioritize. And as we all know, that since mid-March, the governor, when he exacted his executive order to make sure that we stay inside, to make sure that we don't, you know, wander the streets, as they say, because quite ultimately what he didn't want is for us to get people sick. What he wanted to do was flatten the curve here in New Jersey. And to a large extent, you know, the governor has succeeded at doing that. However, what's happened, I think, is a bit of a glaring hypocrisy, as I would just allude to. And I talked about it not just on this podcast. I also talked about it on Monday nights, via Real Talk with Brennetti Uribe and my show that I have with EyesNNJ. Again, you can check it out at www.eyesnnj.org. And, you know, what we saw the last couple of weeks with protests here in New Jersey, and thankfully they were all peaceful, for people to voice their disapproval about what happened to George Floyd in Minneapolis, but more so to sort of be an advocate for racial justice and racial equality in our criminal justice system, for example. And I've talked about it on this show before, having worked in our criminal justice system for 10 years before entering academia, I get all that. But for a lot of people in New Jersey, the fact that we've been told to stay home for months, because if we go outside or if we gather in amounts of 10 or more people, then, you know, we're being irresponsible, we're being reckless, we're being inconsiderate to our vulnerable population. But it was fine for people to go protest and flood the streets, right? And not in all instances wear masks or anything else. And I get it, they were peaceful for the most part. There were some disorderly ones in Trenton and in Atlantic City, and I get all that. But by and large, the governor, and rightfully so, took a lot of heat for, you know, telling us to stay home since mid-March. But then really on a Sunday morning in Hillside, New Jersey, a couple of Sundays ago, there's the governor marching with Black Lives Matter with a mask, and I get all that. That's fine. But there was no social distancing, and you can clearly tell it was a mass of people. But that was fine. And certainly the very next morning, the governor took a lot of flack, again, not just in regular media, but in social media. And as I said before, he deserves all the scrutiny he can get, because all we heard was stay in, stay in, stay in, stay in. And then because it's a cause that matters to people on the left. I think, you know, and we saw it reported on Insider NJ yesterday, where the governor via Attorney General Gabriel Grewal is now getting some guidance, or at least, you know, directing guidance to municipalities on prosecuting knuckleheads. Right? If you remember, the governor made it a point to have electronic signs on state highways urging residents not to be a knucklehead, if you remember that, right? And of course, you know, Republican State Senator Joseph Panaccio called out the governor. I know some people might have said, well, you know, the state senator is a little overly sensitive. Why is he getting triggered by that? Fine, I get all that. But you know what? Senator Panaccio wasn't wrong. And we talked about that last week on Real Talk via Eyes and NJ. But the more important thing is we've been seeing people receiving citations and summonses. And these aren't like peanuts, folks. We're talking about like perhaps over $2,000 summonses. And now it seems as if the Attorney General will be directing municipalities to let go of those summonses or to sort of dismiss them. And that's the right thing to do. Because if he doesn't, I mean, again, the governor looks like a hypocrite. He can go out at the Hillside, New Jersey and march with Black Lives Matter, but he won't reopen New Jersey and reopen thousands of businesses, or at least the opportunity to do so, so people can earn again. Because God knows our unemployment system is still out of whack. There are still thousands of New Jerseyans that are getting their unemployment checks. And obviously the thing that we're doing right now is the fact that the governor is getting scrutiny. Well, guess what, folks? In this regard, what's going to happen to the governor is, for the foreseeable future, until he sort of demonstrates some sort of philosophical consistency, he's going to keep getting this sort of flack. And quite frankly, hey, he should be getting that in every possible way that he can. And I don't know about you folks, but this is where people get miffed at state government. This is where people get really, really pissed off at Trenton, because they say one thing and then do another. And as I said before on another episode of the podcast, or even on Real Talk, I've said, listen, maybe Governor Murphy should change his campaign slogan and just say, hey, the law is for thee, but not for me. Because that's exactly how he looked marching in Hillside, New Jersey during that weekend with Black Lives Matter. Again, I'm not here to sort of dissect what I think about Black Lives Matter. I mean, that can do that another show. I certainly have some fundamental disagreements policy-wise about what the movement is standing for. But again, that's not what today's about. Today's about trying to call, you know, call out the philosophical inconsistencies that exist within the Democratic Party, because we're seeing it, not just in Trenton, folks, but we're seeing it across the country, and it has to stop. And if anyone's going to call it out here in New Jersey, it might as well be me, because God knows no one else is doing that here in the state of New Jersey. And that's my first shot right here on Politically Direct. All right, folks, again, great episode coming up here in just a moment. As we all know, you can check out all of the previous episodes at www.insidernj.com/podcast. And joining me today is one of my favorites, and he's just a great assemblyman out of the 40th Legislative District here in North Jersey. And, it covers a lot of Bergen County, certainly covers some areas in Passaic County, and certainly some areas as well, really, you know, in a very sort of conservative part of the state. And we know that New Jersey has those red pockets, and he's a good guy, and he's a fellow Yankee fan like myself, who I know is dying for baseball to come back in some capacity. He's the great Christopher DePhillips joining us here on Politically Direct. Mr. Assemblyman, how are you, man?
Fernando, how are you? Thanks so much for having me.
Hey, listen, you're one of my favorites. You're I'm not afraid to say that. And I know you, along with Assemblyman Rooney, are doing a great job in the 40th Legislative District. And there's a lot to talk about today, so let's get right to it. You heard a little bit, hopefully you heard a little bit of my opening monologue. I've been I want to keep the PG here, but I've been, you know, bitching and moaning about this for weeks now on the podcast and also on my other show. The governor just seems to, not sort of step all over himself in recent weeks. And it's just infuriating. I think it's what pisses us off about Trenton and about some of the inconsistencies coming out of not just the governor's office, but also the office of Attorney General Gabriel Grewal.
Yeah, well, I did catch the tail end of what you were saying about the fact that the governor violated his own order, which was definitely a mistake on his part. Let me first start by saying, listen, I'm a lawyer. I believe in the First Amendment. I believe in the right to protest peacefully. But, you know, we are still in the middle of a pandemic, and the governor made a mistake by violating his own order. And now he's dealing with backlash, not just from people in my party, but the other party as well. And it obviously changed his plans and his timing for reopening the state. You did see that 2 days after he protested in Hillside, he actually lifted the stay-at-home order, which clearly was not in his plan to do so. So in a way, his mistake may have expedited the reopening of the state, which, of course, many of us want to see happen in a more expedited fashion.
Oh, absolutely. And we know that many New Jerseyans have been taking to social media, have been taking to sort of traditional media, whether it's printing editorials or anything else in their local publications about, they just want to get back and earn, Chris. That's all they want. They just want to get back and be able to earn. And with sort of the chaos that is still permeating with our unemployment system. And I get it. Last week, the governor, along with the Department of Labor Commissioner, expedited the necessity of a call center. Well, that's great and all, but guess what? You know, this could have been done weeks and months ago. And I'm not trying to play Monday morning quarterback here, but the bottom line is that we know that this system in Trenton has been antiquated. You know, it's been in dire need of an update. But for whatever reason, guess what? The governor's office, and in fairness to Governor Murphy, this is a problem that precedes him. It's a problem, I think, that can go back before Governor Christie, before Governor Corzine. It's just, it's an antiquated system that for whatever reason was never addressed. Of course, we would have never expected what happened in 2020 with this pandemic. But in any event, thousands of New Jerseyans, Chris, are without their unemployment benefits. Many find it to be frustrating to try to contact Trenton, to email, to get somebody on the phone. And it just seems like it's a little too late to finally set up this call center last week, where New Jerseyans have been sort of scraping their savings or really just feeling so tight in their pockets in recent months.
Yeah, it's a terrible situation. The Department of Labor technology platform is called COBOL, COBOL, is completely antiquated. And you're right, it did predate Governor Murphy's administration. But the bottom line is that technology has to be thrown out, has to be put right in the garbage. I have a bill that would do that. Obviously, we can't get rid of the technology in the middle of people trying to get paid and getting their claims heard. The Department of Labor is not paying on the claims in any way, shape, or form in a reasonable manner. All the legislative offices, all of us as legislators, we've taken up the slack, and we're the ones helping people process their claims and get heard by the department. And last count, only something like 15% of the people in my district had their claims acted on, and that's totally irresponsible. And, you know, we have an economic pandemic as well as a healthcare pandemic going on in the state. And you're right, people want to get back to work. That's the primary goal. And we have different philosophies in the parties. And with the Murphy administration, it's about getting federal money or borrowing up to $14 billion from the federal government or getting direct federal cash assistance. I think on our side, we want to see the state reopen safely and get people back to work, because people don't want to be on unemployment. They don't want to be unemployed. They want to be able to reopen their businesses safely. Safety comes first, no doubt. But we're behind where we should be with the reopening of the state. Look at outdoor dining. Outdoor dining started this past Monday, June 15th. It most clearly could have happened 3 weeks ago. I mean, the data is no different today than it was three weeks ago.
Yes, yes.
You know, we had substantially flattened the curve by that point. The cases had come way down. You know, the state keeps moving the goalpost. Initially, it was, well, we have to flatten the curve and save the hospitals. Well, we did that. But we did that a while ago. I mean, that was achieved a while ago. Now it's more, well, we have to eradicate the virus and have no cases. And even some people are saying, well, we really shouldn't reopen the state substantially until we have a vaccine. Well, when is that going to happen? So,
yes,
you know, there's an economic pandemic going on in the state, and it actually has healthcare and mental health components to it. If people don't get out of their homes and don't get back to work, you're going to see people suffering physically and mentally. It's already happening now, and we need to pick up the pace of the reopening.
Absolutely. And I've been an advocate about this on the program for weeks now, where I get it, you know, at the onset, a lot of people, regardless of political party or ideology, were applauding the governor for being proactive and really taking a hard stand and trying to flatten the curve. But what we've seen, as you mentioned, Chris, is that in recent weeks, this could have been expedited. We could have seen the state open up sooner. You know, people like myself that have been working from home that were, you know, virtual teaching, and certainly, I mean, we'll get to that in a minute, about the effect it's had on our colleges and universities in New Jersey, as well as our public schools. But again, as you alluded to this past Monday, yes, outdoor dining commenced, but it could have happened sooner. So much of New Jersey during these summer months now is predicated on tourism and hospitality. I've had other legislators on the show in recent weeks here on Politically Direct from the Jersey Shore. As a matter of fact, I had State Senator Vin Gopal on the program a couple weeks ago talking about how it's affected his district down in Monmouth County, and how these shore towns are desperate for reopenings to see some of these businesses hopefully not go under. And we've been seeing that. And one of the things that I found astounding, though, Chris, is sort of the audacity of not just Governor Murphy, but I think across the river with the other knucklehead, Governor Cuomo, sort of demanding or asking the federal government to bail out states like New Jersey and New York. And quite frankly, and I've said this, I think, in previous episodes with you, you know, one party's control of the legislature here in the Garden State. And I get it, we've had governors come and go from different parties, but for the last quarter century, one party's controlled the legislature. One party's controlled the budget. One party's controlled the spending. And here's a number that maybe should flip you out. I know it does me every time. Back in 2004, during Governor McGreevy's administration, the budget submitted to the legislature was $21 billion. Okay, this is 2004. Before the pandemic, the estimated budget in New Jersey was going to be around $43 billion in 2020.
That's right.
Crazy to me. That's crazy to me. And when I hear the governor, which, by the way, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall last weekend when he and the First Lady, Tammy Murphy, had to go have dinner with the president. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall just to see what it looked like, because I can imagine they had to be, like, swallowing their pride to meet with the president. But we'll get to that in a minute. But the idea of wanting to bail out New Jersey, it's almost like, hey, here's a kid with a credit card for the first time, and he or she spends it responsibly. And then when they reach their limit, it's sort of begging their parents, hey, could you just pay off the bill for me? It shows that Trenton has had no accountability when it comes to the budget and spending. And now, clearly economically, Chris, the chickens are coming home to roost.
Well, it's all about the budget for the administration. They want to preserve their $41, $42 billion budget. And, you know, guess what? Revenues are way down. You know, the money's not coming into the Treasury for obvious reason, because, you know, millions of people have been forced onto unemployment. So, you know, the administration's approach is save the budget, get the federal money, borrow as much as possible, and get the direct federal cash assistance. On our side, we want to see the state reopen responsibly, put people back to work, and guess what? Money will start flowing into the state Treasury again if people can get back to work. People don't want the federal handouts. They want to work. And I think it's a misunderstanding of the state to go down the road of federal assistance only. I think they put too much stock in getting the federal money. And I do give the governor credit for meeting repeatedly with the president, and the president meeting repeatedly with Democratic governors. So I think, you know, this is and should be a time for bipartisanship. And I think the governor's done a good job to leverage those meetings to get monies for the state for PPE and other things that the state needs in the middle of a pandemic. But I just don't see that all of the requests that are being made of the federal government will be honored, because the support is just not there in the Congress to bail out states like New York and New Jersey. It's just not there.
Absolutely, and rightfully so. I listen, believe me, as much as I want some sort of fiscal harmony here in New Jersey, I don't think Congress should bail out states like New York or New Jersey or Illinois. I'm sorry. Like, that's the fiscal conservative in me. I don't want to see Washington do that, because it just sets a bad precedent. It's telling Trenton, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. You know, keep spending it responsibly. Keep having the highest property taxes in the nation. Keep raising tolls, which we'll get to, which really is just really pissed me off, Chris. The idea of raising tolls on the parkway and the turnpike come September in the middle of this economic pandemic, as you mentioned, that's a great word, is just so irresponsible. I mean, the idea of Trenton somehow justifying a bailout, I think, is absurd. But we'll get back to that in a moment. And folks, you know, for those of you listening today, and you're not familiar with the 40th Legislative District, I mean, I would make the argument, Chris, it's probably one of the wealthier parts of the state in Bergen County. Last week I had Bergen County Executive Jim Tedesco on, and certainly, as we know, you know, Bergen County is the largest county in the state with so many municipalities. But, you know, we see a lot of affluent municipalities here in the 40th, Allendale, Franklin Lakes, Hohokus, Smithton Park, Ridgewood, Waldwick and Wyckoff, you know, parts of Essex County as well, you know, Cedar Grove and parts of Morris County. What's been the feedback, at least from your office, during this pandemic as it pertains to, yes, it's one of the wealthier parts of the state, but people are still feeling the crunch regardless?
Yeah, it's the district is economically diverse. There are some affluent communities. There's several middle-class communities. And there's some working class towns, too. So there is diversity across the district. But
yes,
doesn't matter what, quote unquote, economic demographic you're in, the pandemic is hitting each group very difficult, you know, in a very hard way. So I'm getting calls from CEOs and I'm getting calls from, you know, quote unquote, working class people in my district saying, I don't have much more time. I'm going to lose my job in a couple of weeks or I've already lost my business. And I've spoken to many business owners in my district who've already moved. They're already gone. And there are other CEOs have called to say, I have 2 weeks left or I have 3 weeks left. I'm not getting the assistance from the EDA or the state or the federal government I need to survive. So it is hitting groups equally. Obviously, there are some people in my district who are very well off and they have money saved. And they can live off those savings for 6, 7, 8 months. But most people can't do that. And that's who I'm fighting for. I'm fighting for the people who are living paycheck to paycheck. And even some affluent people who you would think are affluent, they're also living paycheck to paycheck. They're overextended. And I pass judgment on them. But businesses are closing. Families are considering moving. My own wife is a realtor. You can't even imagine, you know, what impact there's been on the real estate market of this pandemic. In a way, you have lots of people coming out from New York and Hoboken and Jersey City. They want to buy homes in the 40th Legislative District, right? But, you know, there are people in their homes in the 40th District and in every legislative district in the state who are wondering if they can continue to pay their mortgages. So this part of the pandemic, the economic pandemic, has healthcare consequences. People literally are having trouble putting food on the table, keeping their families healthy, and there's a mental health component of it as well. So, again, we have a competition of policies. You know, the Murphy administration wants to go to the federal government and basically beg for more resources. There's a way to do it on the other side, which is to reopen the state in a more expedited way to get people back to work. And every week that goes by when businesses are shut down means another family is not going to be able to pay their bills and another family is probably going to put the for sale sign up.
Absolutely. And we're seeing that. And as you mentioned before, yes, it is very economically diverse in the 40th. I mean, as we mentioned, yes, there are some affluent municipalities, but as you mentioned, also middle class and working class towns such as Pompton Lakes, Totowa, Wayne, Woodland Park, Little Falls, and Riverdale, of course, in Morris County. So, yeah, you're absolutely right about the diversity economically throughout the district, Chris, and it's one that it just seems to be infuriating for so many New Jerseyans where, you know, we've seen a mass exodus of people leaving the state in recent years. It's just becoming overwhelmingly expensive, as I alluded to previously, and as you know, the highest property taxes in the country. It just seems like Trenton cannot get out of its own way. It continues to spend like a drunken sailor. Again, no disrespect to sailors. They're admirable people that serve in our military, but my goodness, I mean, they're giving drunken sailors a bad name in Trenton. And again, I don't want to get overly partisan here, but one party has ruled the legislature, and it just seems that there's no limit to raising the tax when they want. It seems like the governor and Trenton Democrats have never met a tax that they don't like. They've never hesitated to increase spending, and we've seen that. And it's really frustrating, especially in a time that we're living in now. Even pre-COVID, we're seeing that Trenton has been acting irresponsibly. And I sort of want to ask, because I know that on previous episodes, I've had a former colleague of yours on this program, former Assemblyman Michael Patrick Carroll, who, you know, he's a very interesting personality, to say the very least, on social media. He's a guy, you know, attorney like yourself, who's not afraid to sort of call out the fiscal irresponsibility in Trenton. But how frustrating must it be to be in the minority party in Trenton when you're trying to work as hard as you can for your constituents, but it seems that you're being overrun by tax and spend Democrats?
Yeah, it's frustrating. And in this pandemic, it's frustrating too, because the bottom line is we need to do more with less. You know, during the pandemic, you know, families in my district are doing more with less. There's less money coming in, so they cut their budgets. We need to do the same at the state level. Why are we talking about keeping the budget 100% intact when we have so much less revenue coming into the Treasury? It's not responsible. We can actually cut some programs. We can look across the spectrum of the budget and say, well, you know what? We can cut that now. Maybe we'll get back to that later. But now, you know, we can't afford a $42 billion budget. And we're never going to get, you know, all the money we need from the federal government to make the state budget whole. So we need to look at cuts. And even pre-pandemic, I've been preaching this. Why not look at programs across the spectrum of the state government and actually do an analysis of what's working and what's not? So I don't know why people are afraid to do that. There are people afraid to even keep the state within a 2% cap, like every town in New Jersey has to. So it is frustrating. I do my best to work across the aisle. I have many colleagues and friends on the other side of the aisle. And I know that for my bills to get passed, I have to have relationships with Democrats in the Assembly. And I do. And I've actually worked really well with Governor Murphy and his administration on various issues, like the innovation policies that we need to keep our innovation economy going. And the governor has been great on that. And I give him kudos and his people on that, because it's been a bipartisan approach to tax credits and increasing the angel investor tax credit and, you know, forming public-private partnerships around innovation and life sciences. I'm not afraid to say when the administration has done a good job, and it has done a good job there. And I won't attack the governor personally. He's very gracious. He's been very gracious to me and my family. But I'm not afraid to disagree with the administration on policies and ideas that are not working. That's what it's all about. It's a debate about policies and ideas. And I just disagree with the pace of the reopening. I disagree with the lack of consistency that we've had during the pandemic, with big box stores open everywhere, but small businesses have to suffer. That's just not right. And we have to fix that.
Chris, amen to that. Absolutely. And I know plenty of small business owners who are feeling that crunch. And I'm with you. I'll give the governor credit where it's due, as you just alluded to. But again, it's like anything else. You know, it's a result-oriented business. Just like sports, politics is the same way. If you're not getting things done and you're not succeeding, or you're not serving, in this case, the constituents in a way that's consistent, people are going to have something to say. It's as simple as that. And in terms of calling out the Murphy administration, I mean, you know, you've been consistent about it. And I know in recent days you've been in the headlines. I know via Insider NJ there was a good piece on a couple of days ago, as a matter of fact, on the 16th of June, where rightfully so, you're outraged. The Murphy administration has decided to not testify during hearings when it comes to examining the breakdowns that have happened at our long-term care facilities and the oversight or the lack thereof that we've seen at them. We've seen so many elderly people, in my opinion, die unnecessarily during this pandemic. And, you know, the governor seems to be very eager to call out others about accountability. I know he's been gracious in recent days to meet with the president, but beforehand, you know, on a national level, a lot of Democrats were calling out the president for what they thought not good leadership during this pandemic. Well, here in New Jersey, a lot of people are accusing the governor of the exact same thing when it comes to oversight breakdowns at long-term care facilities. The same can be said across the river with Governor Cuomo, who I would argue has been blatant about it as well. I know, you know, you're outraged at this. If you could just sort of share with our listeners today, quite frankly, at the heart of the matter, what really is aggravating you about the governor right now when it comes to this?
The biggest issue is it's really a process issue, and it's actually a legal issue as well. We don't have just one branch of government. We actually have three. But putting the judiciary aside, the legislature and the executive branch are co-equal branches. So, for example, this week we had hearings in the assembly on what happened in our nursing homes. I mean, more than 50% of the deaths in New Jersey from COVID-related symptoms happened in nursing homes and long-term care facilities, as well as veterans' homes. So it's about time that the legislature starts asking questions of the administration as to what happened and why. And I think we know part of what happened already is that the commissioner of the Department of Health issued a directive early on in the pandemic, basically saying that nursing homes had to accept back into their facilities COVID patients coming out of the hospital. And so we had a hearing in the assembly on that this week, but guess what? Not one witness from the Department of Health was there to answer questions from members of the legislature. We cannot have government by executive order only. The legislature has a role for obvious reasons. There's 120 of us in the legislature. We represent the entirety of the state of New Jersey. So I was shocked that no one attended from the administration. And it was through no fault of the chairwomen of the two committees in the assembly, who are Democrats, who are very disappointed also that the administration didn't send witnesses. Now, we're hoping there are going to be additional hearings, and we're hoping the commissioner will be there for the next hearing to answer questions. And it is our role to provide oversight, and we need to provide rigorous oversight of what the executive branch is doing now and has been doing during the pandemic.
Absolutely, because we want answers. I mean, very much what we've seen out of Trenton in recent years is whenever we have hearings on different matters, whether it's not seen enough accountability out of Trenton, whether it's not seen enough sort of responsibility being taken, this is something that is overwhelmingly tragic. I mean, as someone who lost my grandmother during this, not necessarily because of COVID, but having to see her be hospitalized and seeing so many people being hospitalized, I mean, I'm thankful that she didn't have to be put in a long-term facility. I'm glad that she was able to go peacefully in her sleep in the hospital. But not everyone had that luxury. And New Jerseyans, I think, want answers about what's going on. The idea of allowing COVID symptom-type patients back into nursing homes is irresponsible, Chris. It's as simple as that.
Right. And if we're going to learn from mistakes, we have to hear about the mistakes and people have to own up to the mistakes. And in fact, one of the witnesses at the hearing this week that I questioned, she was the consultant that the Department of Health hired after the nursing home crisis began. And in response to my questioning, she admitted that it was a wrong-headed policy for the department to insist that COVID patients be readmitted into nursing homes. This was at the end of March, early April. She is the consultant for the Department of Health, and she admitted, and she was very diplomatic about it, but she did admit that the policy was wrong. It was a mistake, and it shouldn't be repeated. So again, we need to hear from the commissioner about that and why that decision, that directive was made. And of course, that's our role as legislators to have more of a voice in policy. Again, the administration and the governor, it can't just be one branch of government ruling the state. It has to be a collaborative approach.
Absolutely. And when we talk about collaborative approach, it has to be everyone involved, regardless of party. As you mentioned, the importance of being bipartisan in this, because that's the only way we're going to get answers, Chris. It's as simple as that. It's the only way we're going to get any sort of clarity about why this tragedy occurred. And because we don't want it to happen again, we're hoping obviously for not for anything like what we've been seeing in 2020. As I said at the onset of the program, Chris, I just wish we could just control alt delete 2020 and just restart all over again, for God's sakes, or just take me to 2021 already. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm mentally exhausted this year because of what's been going on with this pandemic, and more so seeing the impact of the economy affecting thousands of my fellow New Jerseyans. And I'm sure for you, again, as a legislator, this has to be driving you up the wall as well, because a lot of us here are going stir crazy at home. A lot of people want to get back to work. As I said, people want to earn. The idea of, hey, you know what, let's you know, let's have a universal basic income. You know, let's depend on government. No, I mean, that's, I get it. There are some, you know, on the ideological spectrum, those that, you know, look at the governor very fondly or part of his base that love that rhetoric. And I don't know about you, but that's not what I'm about. I'm not about a universal basic income. I'm not about handouts. I'm not about people depending on government, because when we depend on government too much, it's when government tends to sort of rule our lives. And that's not democracy, Chris.
Yeah, and the numbers are staggering. I mean, a report came out this week that 28% of New Jersey residents have actually applied for some form of unemployment protection during this pandemic, 28%. And it's probably, that number's higher for younger people coming out of college. So these
sure.
are these are earth-shattering numbers, staggering numbers. Our economy has been shattered in many ways. And again, it was a healthcare pandemic first, and we have to do what's right to protect our residents and protect the state. But this can't go on forever. And you know, you need to show that the data is actually driving these decisions. We've heard that over and over again. But show us the data. I mean, that's another thing that we've been asking for as legislators. Show us the data why you had to wait until June 15th for outdoor dining in beautiful weather when all the data shows that it is very, very difficult to transmit the virus outdoors if there's appropriate social distancing. So what was really the difference between June 15th and, say, May 22nd, the Friday before Memorial Day weekend, when all the shore towns were begging, hoping for outdoor dining? And, you know, people want to do the right thing. Everyone wants to be safe. And all these businesses that are starting to slowly reopen, they know they need to do the right thing, or they're actually not going to be able to make any sales with their customers. People in New Jersey, the first thing on their minds when they walk into a, you know, into a restaurant or some business that is open, and you know, retail opened this week, non-essential retail opened this week at 50% capacity. Those customers need to trust those business owners, or they're not gonna put money down there. So of course,
Absolutely.
Safety has to come first, but the business owners just need a chance to do the right thing. And if they don't do the right thing, the customers aren't going to come. But so we're at the point where we have to trust people a little bit to do the right thing, give them a chance to reopen. And if they don't do the right thing, they're going to suffer economically. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right on that. And speaking about the bottom line, you know, something I wanted to sort of touch upon with you today, Chris, because, again, part of the reason, as you said, that forced the governor's hand to sort of maybe expedite the reopening more than he would have liked, well, it's the fact that a couple of weekends ago, certainly we saw throughout New Jersey, where I live here in Hudson County, for example, in Hoboken and certainly in parts of North Hudson and even in Jersey City, we saw protests. We saw people mobilizing. And I obviously am one that am all for the First Amendment. I mean, I'm a history professor. I teach the Bill of Rights consistently every semester to my students, and I remind them how important it is in our document. The most sacred legal document, I would argue, in mankind. But we saw that weekend the governor taking to Hillside, New Jersey, marching with a chapter of Black Lives Matter, which is fine. The governor can do that. I'm not going to criticize him for it. I personally, I have some reservations about Black Lives Matter because of some of the messages that are being put out there. And one that has been in the news cycle, Chris, is the idea of defunding the police. And it's more, at least as an academic, this is not by accident. It's not, oh, someone isn't phrasing this correctly, or maybe someone could think of the term better. No, it's, I would argue this is done on purpose. The idea, well, it could have been phrased better. We could have said reallocate or redistribute. No, I think in segments of this movement, which can be radical, the idea of defunding the police is something that they really believe in. And I think that while the governor hasn't taken a stance on it, nor has Attorney General Gabriel Gowal, it's put the governor in a really bad spot because obviously, A, he has to, and I hate to make this a left-right issue because it's not, but he's had to pander to sort of the liberal base of his party where they've been out there taking to the streets, again, thankfully, in a peaceful manner. But it just seems like rhetoric like that we're hearing about defunding the police seems very irresponsible, Chris. And I know that you're someone very much like myself who's a conservative, you know, center-right type of guy. When you're hearing, more so as a lawyer, I just think this is reckless and irresponsible to even advocate for something like that.
Well, and I'm not even hearing it from Democrats in our state. I'm not hearing it from Governor Murphy. I didn't hear it from the AG. Senator Booker was on a news show recently, and even Senator Booker said, no, I'm not advocating for that. I think most people know we can't actually exist in a civilized society without a police department that has the tools and the resources to protect us. So the issue really is about training and making sure that police officers understand their communities. And I think most police officers do understand their communities, and they have relationships in their communities, and they want to do the right thing, and they do the right thing. Obviously, we've had examples of terrible conduct from police officers who are more than bad apples. So I think most Democrats I speak to are not advocating for that and won't advocate for that because they know it's irresponsible. It's a reckless policy.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And let me just pick your legal brain here, Chris, because I continue to be an attorney I respect immensely. We've heard in recent weeks the Supreme Court maybe looking to revisit some cases that would ultimately end qualified immunity. Now, again, I'm only an academic, so you'll have to sort of correct me when I'm wrong here in my articulation of the facts. But it seems that qualified immunity is what has been protecting a lot of departments in civil cases when it comes to police misconduct. And I would argue, again, as a layman, it would seem commonsensical that if you want to maybe clean up a lot of misconduct, the idea of ending qualified immunity sounds like a good idea, because of the impact it's going to have on civil cases. But we know the biggest opposition that this could face will be from police unions. You're an attorney. If you could break it down for me, it sounds like ending qualified immunity could be a good thing. Is it?
You know what? I really need to read up on that more. I'm not prepared to give you a policy statement that I've endorsed.
Gotcha.
On that.
Oh, okay.
So I think I'm familiar, obviously, with the issue. It's complicated on both sides. Police unions need to be heard on this. With respect to matters like this, I listen very closely to the state PBA. Mm-hmm. I have a very good relationship with the state PBA in New Jersey. I would listen to them, but I would listen to the spectrum of all groups who are interested in the issue. It's not come before the legislature. If it does, obviously I'll become an expert on it quickly.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'll have to. I mean, it's one of those things where it falls in your lap and you have to just, be proactive about it. Chris, I got to ask, because I know that the governor this week also released a statement about, and something that affects me working in higher education, is the ability for us to sort of transition back into the classroom come the fall. We know that because of this pandemic, it's really affected learning at all levels. I know for me, teaching virtually was a challenge to some extent, but more so for my kids who, A, had to be home and for the first time, survive either via Zoom meetings or just surviving via portals. We know that as it trickles down to our high schools and public schools, teachers are also faced with tremendous challenges. Come the fall, I'm hoping that we can get back to some sense of normalcy. But the idea of our public schools and colleges and universities maybe not being back to normal when it comes to in-classroom instruction is something we may have to really face.
Yeah, I'm hoping and praying that that sense of normalcy will return by the fall. I'm a father of four. I had a son who just graduated from Boston College just a few weeks ago, graduated from home, so that was a surreal experience. I have my second child is going to be a junior in college, also at Boston College. So, they've put out guidance, and they certainly indicated that they will be going back full-time in the fall. And it's going to be challenging. I mean, the guidance coming from that particular university is we'll be back, but every student will be wearing a mask in class, for every class, every day of the week. So it's an adjustment. And And again, safety comes first. And when you have kids in colleges living on top of each other, of course, you know, safety has to come first, and you have to make sure that people are being tested and they're wearing masks and there's temperature checks and all the other things we need to have happen so we can isolate the virus if it does, rear its ugly head in a particular place. Across the state of New Jersey and in the lower grades, I know the departments are putting out guidance. I know in our particular school district, the hope, of course, is for kids to return again in the fall for high school and for elementary school. But, you know, they're working at a feverish pace to make sure that the guidance is in place so that kids can return to that normalcy. I mean, I saw it with my own eyes, with my own kids. My youngest is going into seventh grade. I mean, she was on, you know, video call after video call from March through the end of the school year. School year ended yesterday. And, you know, she did well with it. She's technologically savvy. And, you know, her teachers were very good about, sort of that daily contact with the kids via video, checking in, making sure they understand their assignments and teaching them. And that's not, you know, always the situation. And some kids aren't as savvy at technology as others. Other kids around the state don't have the resources that some other kids do. And that's a real challenge, making sure that the technology is available for all. I'm just hoping that the data continues to move in the right direction, and it is, such that we'll be ready to go back in the fall. But it's not going to be exactly the way it was in the past.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And Chris, I have to ask, first of all, congratulations on the graduation of your son, you know, from
Thank
BC. I'm sort of concerned, being up there in BC, he didn't abandon his Yankee loyalty, right, and become a Red Sox fan.
No, he's absolutely not a Red Sox fan. He's a diehard Yankees fan as well as a diehard Giants football fan. I don't think he's going to miss all the attention to the Patriots up there. Let's put it that way.
Okay, cool. I mean, sometimes, you know, you're up there in Red Sox Nation, and you know how convoluted that is. Good to hear that your son stayed loyal to the Pinstripes here.
100%.
Before I let you go, absolutely, thank the Lord. Chris, before I let you go, and you've been a great guest tonight, I'm looking forward to this Monday for you being on Real Talk. Took considerably less time. I know you've been a gentleman today to give me as much time as you have. But real quick before I let you go, I know that even pre-COVID, we know that, under state law, the budget was supposed to have been passed by June 30th. Obviously, that's been delayed until October. But pre-COVID, what was some of the feedback in your district about what your constituents wanted to see addressed in the budget? We know, again, unfortunately, it seems to keep ballooning up every year. We know the Trenton Democrats love to inflate this like a balloon on the boardwalk and seaside almost. That's what it sounds like the budget looks like. But what were some of the concerns that you were having about the budget going into budget season, even, you know, pre-COVID?
Yeah, the challenges have been actually getting the majority to listen to the concerns that I and some of my colleagues on the Republican side have, particularly with the 2% cap. Why can't we have a 2% cap in place for state government like we do for all 567 municipalities? It's total hypocrisy not to. So we have legislation pending for that. Let's just say there's not a lot of Democrats jumping on board that bill. And then my colleague, Assemblywoman Serena DeMasso, and I, we started a tax cut caucus in the Assembly. We did get some traction from a couple of Assembly Democrats. But again, along the lines of what I said earlier, which is we don't just have to keep increasing the budget year over year over year, sort of in a blind way. Why don't we look at programs? Let's audit state government. Let's look at programs, program by program, figuring out what's working and what's not. And let's actually have a discussion about cutting the budget or cutting programs that aren't working. Do we really need to have 12% increases in the state budget? That's what the governor recommended in his first year in office. I mean, so we've had, when the governor came in just 2.5 years ago, the budget was in the high 30s. Now it's in the low 40s. And you know, no one raises an alarm bell. Like, we just can't afford this anymore. we need to have tighter budgets. We need to make cuts. And it's okay, actually, to have a flat budget. Why not just have no increases one particular year? Give the taxpayers a break. Give them some breathing room. So my emphasis has been trying to change the tone, the tenor, and changing the conversation away from tax and spend to let's cut some taxes and cut some spending and give the property tax, give it a rest. I mean, because, you know, whatever the state's doing, it's not doing anything to control property taxes. So that's what I'm trying to do. Again, that was all pre-COVID, but the same philosophy continues into the pandemic, which is, you know, we can't have a $42 billion budget in the middle of an economic pandemic. We just can't. So we do need to cut, and now's the time to do it because the money's not there.
Absolutely, Chris. And unfortunately, we're seeing some really irresponsible economic practices. As I alluded to real quick before I let you go, we know that the Turnpike Authority and the Parkway Authority authorized toll hikes, which take effect in September. The governor had no problem signing this into law. Is there any recourse for us taxpayers? I mean, is there any way to take the Turnpike Authority or the Parkway Authority to task? Is there any way that someone in the legislature can either hold a hearing or call them? Because, I mean, they're hiding behind the umbrella of, oh, well, the money's for infrastructure projects. What the gas tax was for? I mean, Jesus Christ, why is the Turnpike Authority and Parkway Authority doing this? I mean, is there any way to hold these people accountable?
Sure. I mean, we can have hearings. Many of us have called for hearings. Even those who are believing that we need to, shore up infrastructure and have a more robust infrastructure are saying, this is just not the right time. Let's have this conversation at a different time. So, yes, we should have hearings. The question is, will we have hearings? But I will be pushing for them.
I'm glad to hear that, Chris. And that's why you're one of the better public servants in New Jersey. And again, I think people are really blessed in the 40th legislative district, not just only with you, but with Kevin Rooney, who I'm hoping to have back on the show, as well as State Senator Corrado in the 40th. So people that will be listening to the episode here from their district, I mean, they should thank their lucky stars every day, because there are some districts around the state that have some really bad legislators, but that's not the case in the 40th. So, Chris, I want to thank you for your time. You're such a gentleman. I look forward to having you on this Monday. I'll make sure to send you an email with the link and everything. I look forward to having you on this Monday night live on Real Talk, and we'll continue to have a great conversation there on the show. But you're always a gentleman, and once again, keep up the great work. I'm glad you and your family are healthy and well during this pandemic, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Great. Thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate you thinking about me, and I thought it was a great conversation. So we will obviously talk very soon.
Absolutely, Chris. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Have a good one. All right, folks. Bye-bye. So great episode. Absolutely. Folks, have a great, listen to the show if you haven't, tuned in. I know that these are the type of wonderful guests that I love to have on this program, because we can talk policy, we can talk current events, we can talk about what's going on in New Jersey. And I'll tell you, when you look at a legislator like Christopher DePhillips in the 40th Legislative District, it makes my job a lot easier here on the show when you have a guest like him. So God bless his good work. And as I said, I look forward to having him on this Monday night streaming live via www.eyesonnj.org. For Real Talk, I think we'll have a great conversation on Monday there on the show as well. But folks here on the podcast, I can't say enough about, quite frankly, how important it is to bring you these exclusives, to talk with individuals that, without question, give us clarity about what's going on. And listen, oftentimes, it gets a little partisan, because oftentimes we look at the direction ideologically that both Republicans and Democrats, conservatives and liberals are taking when it comes to spending, when it comes to downright policy, and what's in the best interest of New Jersey residents. And I think in a lot of instances, when we see the ballooning of the state budget, when we see a sort of tax and spend mentality that's so pervasive on one side of the aisle, it's refreshing to hear that one legislator doesn't follow that irresponsible mandate, as one side of the aisle does consistently here in the Garden State. So without question, folks, he's a great guest, and certainly look forward to having him back on again here on the podcast, in addition to his colleague, Cameron Rooney, in addition to also you know, at some point, hopefully State Senator Corrado out of the 40th Legislative District, who I know is also doing a great job there for her constituents. And folks, if you miss any part of the podcast, again, it goes to today's episode in its entirety and all of my previous episodes by going to www.insidernj.com/podcasts. You can download the episodes and listen to them from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. What can I tell you? These are the exclusives that you want to hear, and these are the guests I'll keep bringing to you. So if you have a suggestion for a guest or topics to talk about on the show coming up, write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Certainly, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj, as well as my own Instagram at Professor Fernando Uribe. And also hit me up on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. Tons of new followers, many new likes, and of course, I know many of you enjoy my Instagram stories, and why not? I try to give you a little bit of everything on that platform. So, and folks, don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook. Tons of new likes every day, and certainly traffic is great on there. And what can I tell you? Without you, my loyal listening audience, this show would not be possible. And don't forget to check out Insider NJ by going to www.insidernj.com. You can do so, again, from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. And it brings you the best coverage of the political scene in the state of New Jersey. Nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Starts with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, along with our just incredible columnists, which include Fred Snowflake, Jay Lasseter, Alan Steinberg, and many, many more. So when you go on the website, click on the upper right-hand corner, folks. The subscribe button is right there. You'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you're watching, let's say, the morning talk shows, like me, you're watching the sports shows, you're flipping back and forth between ESPN and Fox Sports, whether it's First Take or Undisputed, or The Herd with Colin Cowherd. Hey, I'm scrolling through my inbox, and guess what? I like to check out the morning intelligence briefing because it gives me the 411 about what's going on in New Jersey politics. And once again, nobody does it better than Insider NJ. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and, of course, follow them on Twitter. And remember, don't forget to start and end your day without Insider NJ. All right, folks, that's our show for this week. Certainly, you'll hopefully enjoy this as well as the other archives on the podcast page. Again, www.insidernj.com/podcasts. And hope you enjoy them. Let me know what you think about the show. And again, without you, my low listening audience, the show would not be possible. So in advance, I want to wish all the dads out there a very happy Father's Day. It starts with my own dad and my uncle and all the other dads out there who do a great job every single day. Father's Day should be every day as far as I'm concerned, folks. And no, that's not some toxic, you know, aim by me to enlarge the patriarchy or whatever, or it's toxic masculinity. No, it's just respecting dads and the great thing that they do every day. So for any feminists out there that got triggered by that statement, chill out, please, relax. It's not that serious, and don't have a tantrum about it. So again, happy Father's Day to you all. Enjoy it this weekend in some capacity. I know we were limited here in New Jersey, but enjoy it with your dads. I know I will. And we'll see you next week here, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. Good night. Allendale, New Jersey, a great town in the 40th Legislative District. Great people living there in Allendale. I'll see you next week here, folks, on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.